Hey guys out there, this is the Addicted Podcast number 5. I'm Cameron Black. I'm sitting here with Marlon Fever, Josh Handy, and Lucas Holmgren. And I think today we are going to be talking a lot about Steelhead. We got Roger Hincliffe coming from the East Coast. We're going to talk some East Coast Steelhead, some West Coast Steelhead, some summer Steelhead, or the lack thereof that I think is going to be coming up this summer for the Columbia River and some of the tributaries. And the going-on's going on there. So what are we going
to... But before we talk about that, we're going to definitely need to talk about what's going on with these springers.
Oh, yes.
Since we know you've been out whacking them.
Getting a few. So yeah, so the springer fishery in the Columbia has finally kind of took hold last week. We were fishing the Thursday through Monday, whatever the dates were. I can't remember if they were the...
I don't know.
Yeah.
We were fishing.
Whatever the dates were. We were fishing last week, so hopefully you're catching this in current time. But yeah, fishing was pretty good. Lots of individual pods of fish moving through the system. You know, you just kind of had to be there. We kind of took up back trolling. And as we were watching boats on anchor catch fish, we would, you know, on our next pass, either move out, move those depths, kind of move around a lot. And we were able to kind of keep on some of those pods of fish that are moving in. But the fishing's been good. We caught 2,200 fish out of our 6,900 that the quota allotted. So therefore, we're going to be fishing again this week. This is getting recorded on a Tuesday. But we'll be starting to fish this Thursday again through Sunday, the 20th through the 23rd of April, which is pretty late in the season for us to be fishing.
Yeah.
Due to all our high water and all that stuff, we're going to be getting after it. It's a pretty good opportunity, and I think fish are going to die.
It's definitely going to be a bloodbath. I can't wait.
Yeah, we got good conditions finally right now. The water's definitely clearing up. There's fish in the system. Test fisheries the last 3 weeks have been really, really strong, and what those are is they actually take some of the old commercial fleet, and they run them out there and do some sampling of the river where they drop the net in, they see what's in the water, because you know the fishermen, you know, we're only as good as the conditions are. You know, if the fish can't see our baits and the high water's high or the water's dirty, got lots of debris, we're just not as effective. And so the nets can drop in and actually give the Department of Fish and Wildlife, you know, an indication of what's sitting in that lower river. And like I said, test fisheries have been showing strong. The sport fishery picked up this Thursday through Sunday. I think it's going to be the Super Bowl. That's going to be really good.
But so, it's been a long time coming considering the early season we had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, some of the fishing we were seeing last week would be kind of similar to the fishing we'd see probably the third and fourth week of March, you know, where you were seeing a couple hundred fish maybe getting caught on the river a day as far as like as a whole. You know, we weren't seeing our 1,000 fish days, but we were seeing, you know, definitely putting some numbers. The guys that kind of got lucky and got in front of some fish would definitely be putting, you know, 2 to 3 to 4, maybe 5 and 6 in the box. Or some of the guys in the lower river that are really doing well, but that's kind of shows that those fish have moved into the system, but they're just kind of being slow to moving up the system just because of the high water. So there's some fish down there.
Is the water dropping?
Yeah, the water's on a slower, steady drop. It's not dropping as fast as we'd like, but it's definitely down, you know, where the Columbia River at Vancouver was, you know, 16 and 17 feet. You know, two and a half weeks ago, now we're getting down into that 12 to 13 foot range, which is kind of a normal high water,
yeah,
is what I'd call it. So we're pretty used to fishing these conditions. But on top of that, you know, a lot of the debris and a lot of the turbidity is washed out of the system. So now we got good clarity. I mean, we're getting 3 foot of this. I'm seeing guys getting them on the downstream troll in certain areas. You know, there's definitely going to be some good opportunity. I'm stoked. It's going to be a long couple days on the river.
That's definitely what I'm stoked about, is that clarity clearing up, water slowing down a little bit. You're going to be able to troll, get back to the way I like to fish.
Handy thinks he's just going to go out and troll.
Oh, I'm going to sluice
ball. Like 35 feet of water.
It's cute, but he's not, but it's cute. Well, it depends on where you go.
It's better than sitting
guys
on anchor and going 0 for 7. So.
Well, don't sit on anchor. Go back troll. Okay, best of both worlds, bro. Yeah, what we've been doing lately is we've been just back trolling just our herrings with our bobbers. You know, I did a little tutorial at the start of the season talking about bobber and herring, and I mean, this year, whether it become Cowlitz or the Columbia, it has definitely been the go-to technique this year. I mean, I've mopped up on so many fish just running that and just having that a good insurance policy of using that little float in front of my herring, doing it a lot on anchor. And now that the water's, you know, when the water was really high, we were anchored up on the inside seam lines, letting those fish come to us. And now that the water's kind of starting to drop just a little bit, you know, those fish are moving out off of those seam lines. They're kind of coming up over the whole bar. Like, you know, instead of running in one lane, they're running in, you know, a wider lane. And so being able to back troll and kind of move as you see other anchor boats and other people catch fish, it's just been working. I mean, it's just been working. It hasn't been red hot, but we're getting our fish.
Yep. So. Definitely noticed that on Sunday. You see fish a little more sporadic depths, not just one single lane.
So yeah, I got good sign. I knocked one
Sunday,
out.
Monday, I saw a lot of guys trolling, getting them.
Yeah.
A lot.
Definitely.
I mean, even when the water was at 17 feet, there was opportunity to get them trolling. I mean, it's not
a matter. I'm not talking about that, though. I'm saying as the water's dropped, you're seeing way more trollers.
Yeah, as the water drops, it'll open up more of those inside river bends, behind islands, below islands, stuff like that. You know, there's going to be more. You know, to the fish, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's still a bait presented whatever way, but it's just like steelhead fishing. You're only as good as you picking the technique for the conditions. You know, you can't be, you know, everybody who thought last year that anchor fishing was the only way you catch a springer, watch the trollers just go to town on them. You know, it's kind of the opposite this time, but like I said, every spot you could go, you know, you got to look at it. Oh, this is going to definitely be too fast. I got anchor fish. Although this has got a little bit of, you know, I could probably move around a little bit. The flat's a little wider. I can back troll, or, you know, like I said, it's a lot slack water. It's some dead water, but there's still some good clarity. Did some good bottom to where you can troll over it. Cause sometimes, you know, these guys that want to troll in the high water, you're getting in too close to shore. You're finding snags. You're finding all those backwater areas that aren't clean. And you're going to lose a lot of gear trying to find those spots. But if you can find the right spot, you can still troll at flood stage. So it's just a matter of
Have you seen the tides affecting it much this year? Like,
you know, we've been fishing throughout the tides. And so, you know, I'd say Thursday and Friday, we were doing more anchor fishing as the water was still real high. And even though we had an incoming tide in the morning, it was still an anchor show. And those fish were running absolutely on the inside. And then now, later on, like yesterday, day before, maybe even on Sunday, those fish started moving out. And during the incoming tide, the tide was still running out. You know, the river's still overpowering the tide, but the tide was still running out, and you could see that the fish were kind of out on those flats. And then as the tide, you know, went from high slack into outgoing, and the current really ramped up, it pushed those fish back inside. So now you are kind of playing that, okay, where are the fish? You know, early in the morning yesterday, we pulled a fish back trolling out of 28 feet of water, you know. But then later on in the afternoon when that tide's running hard, you know, it was, you know, 16, 14, 12 feet. Like, those fish definitely shoved back in there. So they're gonna continue to move around. That's going to be a big, like you pointed out, tides are going to be a big factor for this next Thursday through Sunday.
A little bit different for the anchor guys that are sitting at one depth.
Yeah, absolutely. The guys that are going to be successful in the anchoring are going to be in those, I call them those like thinner travel lanes. You know, like where I've been particularly fishing is a big, wide, open, flat shooting gallery bar. Like, a fish could swim over here or could swim over here at 50 yards and find that same current. So it's been a little more, challenging, you know, anchoring in the last couple of days. But you're seeing lots of different boats catch lots of different fish.
So what were the GPS coordinates there?
The GPS coordinates... I have a really bad remark there that I probably can't say.
Wouldn't be that hard. Just go cruise down, launch in Woodland, and just cruise up or down river and go find his boat.
Fly in the gone, catching flags.
So,
yeah, I've been behind islands, so good luck.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's been right out in the open, in the main current.
Yeah.
So as of April 16th, we had 503 springers over Bonneville.
You think
we got anything to worry about?
No, I think the test fisheries are still showing good. I mean, yeah, they could... The forecast could come back totally botched. I mean, and if it did, it'd be the first time we've ever seen WDFW or ODFW miss a forecast. So, I mean, it's really, you know, it could happen.
Yep.
But, no, I mean, it could come back. But like I said, you know, the only indications they have before we start seeing that big push of fish over Bonneville is, you know, the fishermen, you know, whether it be the commercial test fishing or the sport fishing. And those fish aren't going to move over the dam until the conditions are right. You know, they'll move into the river system, but they ain't gonna move over the dam. They're looking for like a certain level in they're looking for a certain level in temperature,
the water turbidity,
and there's like a
yet.
Dissolved oxygen, and I can't remember what
you
it
know
was.
What a good indication of that is too, is there's not as many sea lions out there as there normally is.
You know, though,
I don't think they're following them up.
I think they have a hard time hunting in that muddier water, which is why, you know, like in the paper and some of these other people are spotting them. Someone spotted a sea lion in Lacamas Creek.
Yeah.
I mean, those little buggers are getting, you know, they're hunting too. I don't think they can be as effective in the Columbia. Now, I am hearing some of the guys anchoring down in the Longview areas particularly, that they're getting harassed. They're getting beat up by sea lions pretty good. So there's some trained ones down there that need to be removed.
We definitely saw a lot of traveling sea lions on Sunday.
Exactly, and I've seen them kind of move through the area. Like even where I've been up in Woodland and Kalama, I've seen them move through the area and then just move out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they're...
Seems like they go faster when I have my slingshot. Yeah. It's kind of
but they're up in the tributaries eating wild steelhead too. Oh.
It's sad because one of the fish surveyors from Washington Fish and Wildlife, there's a river with a particular dam on it, and they do carcass surveys, and so they draw the water down and they pick up the dead Chinooks, like the dead late spawning Chinooks. And earlier in the season, they picked up 4 or 5 dead sturgeon heads that the sea lions had gone up into the river and killed all the sturgeon sitting there below the dam.
No way.
And then they drug up the carcass. You know, they see the carcasses in the water with big long graph poles. They drag it up. They threw it on the bank. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, those sea lions just went up there and said, well, I'm going to whack these ones. They're just sitting in a pool. Pretty easy.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. It's... sad deal. But, you know, there's some legislation and there's some other stuff starting. I think people are starting to see just how detrimental those things are. So, slow process, but we'll see what happens. But either way, this springer season's been kind of a drag. There's been some fish in the tributaries. I think we'll finally start to get those. But, like, going back to that Bonneville Dam count, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, most of the time those fish really peak over the dam the third and fourth week of April. Don't be surprised if you see those fish peak over the first and second week of May, like we had. Yeah. I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, last high water situation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, springers have been a challenge, but they're out there and go get them and all that jazz.
I think it's safe to say that they're pretty much here now.
Yeah,
and this weekend's gonna be good.
What do we have coming for summers too? Are they coming? They coming behind these springers?
The Chinook or steelhead? Yeah, I think we're supposed to have a pretty strong summer Chinook run. Last I looked, I thought it was over 100K, which is good.
Still.
You know, that season generally opens on June 16th.
I can't wait for that.
However, though, if there's, you know, the way they operate our springer, see, every fish that crosses Bonneville Dam before now, June 15th, is a springer.
Yep.
Whether they are actually springers or not, because you start seeing white-bellied fish going over Bonneville Dam and, you know, June 10th, well, that ain't a springer. That's the summer. But anyways, that's what they're called. That's how it's regulated. And right now we're fishing on 70% of our buffers. So once this season closes, most likely after this weekend, we get to our 70% of what we're allowed to catch. They still save that 30% for when escapement is made over the dam to make sure that the forecast is correct. And then that's when they usually give us those openers kind of in May. And so there's some really good opportunity if they open up May 16th, because Clubby River also opens up for summer steelhead on May 16th. So it kind of coincides with that. You can catch a lot of fish, so it can be pretty good, especially on high water years. Wink, wink. So, should be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be that great this year for steelhead.
For steelhead.
Kind of scary.
And what it is for steelhead, so that forecast is, yeah, that thing is, it's down in the dumps. Summer steelhead, especially the B-run component, is what they're really worried about. The larger, later returning steelhead that, you know, generally show up into the river in July-ish kind of time frame. I was talking to one of the managers, and I guess like the whole North of Falcon process meeting that they were going to was really hampered by this steelhead problem, or this forecasted steelhead problem. There's a lot of, you know, big wild B run returnings that go into the upper reaches and the upper tributaries of the Columbia River, and those numbers are going to be really impacted. And what really stinks about it?
Well, it was like a high water temperature event in the snake that caused it, right? I think is what they were talking about.
Yeah, it could be maybe like some of the outmigration or some of the spawning year wasn't successful. We've had some warm water years lately, so I don't keep as much.
But ocean too, because it's basically the last year the A run was really low, and so this year the B run kind of reflects that. Is this some more, you know?
Yeah, well, see, last year's B run, which is coming in now, is showing pretty strong, but the A run isn't. But so this year's A run will be next year's B run.
Yeah,
those larger fish. Yeah. And so that cycle is coming up this summer, and I believe, and like you can see that like on some of the tributaries, like where guys aren't catching like lots of little steelhead, they're catching a few great big steelhead because those two salt A runners, those things are gone.
Yep.
So who knows what's gonna happen? But at any rate, so something happened up there, and long and short of it is that those fish, where they enter the Columbia in July, are really susceptible to sportsmen, because when the water temperatures start to exceed, you know, 66, 67, 68 degrees, they really crowd in river mouths like Drano Lake, the mouth of Lewis, mouth of the Cowlitz, the Deschutes, a lot of these tributaries that pump cold water in, and they're just easily targeted up and down the Columbia River. And they know they're going to have to scale back those fisheries. And how they're going to do that, whether they do sanctuaries at river mouths or complete river closures or something like that, I think it remains to be seen. But it sounds like that is going to be the talk of the summer. So it's not looking that good. But we'll see what happens.
There's always other stuff to catch, though.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm excited for some bass.
Yeah, you are. You're already scouting them, aren't you?
Yep. I already went out and tried a little bit. It's still too cold.
It's way too high, too, huh?
Yeah.
My nephew got a nice one. Took him out.
Yeah, I've seen some fish getting caught. I think some of those east side little ponds.
Some of those secret.
Because I've been watching the water temperature or the temperatures over there, and they've been consistently 10 degrees higher than over here. It's go time. Yeah.
Some of the people on Addicts have been posting some chunkers, too. Mm-hmm. Some guys kayak fishing in little ponds. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. They could be Southern California, for all I know, but they look like they're...
Especially no, that guy's in Oregon.
The Oregon guy?
Smallmouth is going to be a good ticket right now, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is?
Smallmouth.
Oh, yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah, Cody's wanting to go April, the last week of April. That Horse Thief Lake opens.
Yep.
That's when Cody's wanting to go.
It's a good smally lake.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that when you just throw like giant swim baits for smallies? Because don't they trout plant the heck out of that thing?
Yeah. There's some big boys in there.
Do people use big swim baits for smallies?
Not typically.
No.
But you can use the smaller ones. My lunch breaks are about to get interesting. I got some bass ponds right nearby.
There you go.
Yeah. The spawn happens. Game time. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Stay away from my bass ponds.
Luke is just going to be raking them off the beds.
Well, hey, I just...
Oh, how dare you. Raking them off the beds.
I'm not worried about that personally. That's kind of a large
That's what you said when you were fishing Marlin's home river last week.
That is a little bit different. When it comes to largemouth...
Steelheads.
Especially that video we filmed, Cameron, where that largemouth looked at you... And then you dropped a bait in front of its face, and it still bit. There's something awesome about that aggression that they have. So
it is fun for sure.
I hunted that bass. I walked through the thing. I could see his fin just kind of like up on the surface, and then he was actually faced away from me, and I literally hung my rod out. He was, you know, obviously less than 10 feet away, and I just dropped the thing. I mean, it touched the water. I didn't even see him move. It just exploded. Just bam.
Yep.
He thought he was getting free lunch.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Really fun.
No, I'm looking forward to that too. I'm looking forward to some smallies. Columbia's getting close to 50 degrees, even with how high it is. So it's I don't know. Those backwaters, like you said, should be.
Yeah.
I think this weekend's supposed to see pool, like 67. And
the
stuff
pool
too.
Should be good. The Bonneville pool should be good.
Yeah.
All bass aside, we got Roger Hinchcliffe from Steelhead Manifesto phoning in today, and he's an angler and a writer and a seminar speaker, fishing industry consultant, and a good buddy of mine out from the Michigan area. And we're just going to be talking a little bit about steelhead, the differences between steelhead and the Great Lakes, as well as the West Coast. And Roger fishes out in the Great Lakes, but comes out every year to the West Coast to fish for our steelhead. And this year, Olympic Peninsula. Welcome to the podcast, Roger.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You made it out here to the Olympic Peninsula fishing with Joseph Prinsen recently. How was your trip?
Oh, it was great. I mean, we only got 2 days of fishing in because of Mother Nature. And
that tends to happen.
When we checked the weather report, you know, it looked like we were going to have a great week of fishing. And then, of course, once I flew in and got a day of fishing in, and then, of course, the weather forecast changed and... You know how it goes, Mother Nature, there's nothing you can do about it. So, but we still caught some fish, and I love coming out there. I mean, the West Coast is just absolutely beautiful. I really can't describe it in words. It's just breathtaking.
So, Roger, what do you think the biggest difference is between our steelhead here on the West Coast and the steelhead that you target over there?
Well, I'll tell you this. First, I want to say thank you to the West Coast for giving us the steelhead and salmon, because if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't even have them. But one of the biggest things that I noticed out there is you guys run big stuff, like bobbers. Your bobbers are humongous compared to some of the bobbers that we run. I mean, So depending on, you know, what river we're fishing, we could fish anywhere from a 4 or 5 gram float all the way up to a 15, you know. But typically I'm running 8 and 11 gram floats.
Typically everything out here, you know, on the West Coast is a lot bigger.
During the wintertime, you know, we got to fish with 4 pound test lines sometimes to get bit, because we're home to the world's largest steelhead population on planet Earth, but we're also home to a lot of fishermen. And so when we get after those overfished fish and the water temps get so cold, you know, we really got to scale down the presentations to catch a fish. But at the same time, our fish are nowhere near the size of fish that you guys have. And that's why I have to come out there every year to try to get my fix. You know, we've got the numbers and we've got plenty of fish and it's a great fishery. We just don't have the big fish like you guys get, right?
Do you have them anywhere? Like anywhere over there in the Midwest? Is there big fish that can be found anywhere over there?
Yeah, like for example, in the Muskegon River, the Manistee River, like the Summer Skamania Run, the Grand River, those are the three large rivers that produce fish every year that will go over 15 pounds. There might be a handful of fish every year that's actually reported that might tip the scales at 20, but they're pretty rare.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty rare. So, but our Summer Skamania Run down in Trail Creek in Indiana and then also Southwest Michigan, we do see some pretty big fish. But over the past couple of years, we haven't seen as many big ones as we have in the past.
Yeah, and the Skamania has actually come from a nice little tributary right near us. So,
well, I will tell you, out of all the steelhead here in the Great Lakes that I fish for, the Skamania is my favorite. They're evil. They're just the devil. They're cartwheeling evil. And
definitely got some
spots. You know, that's why I love to fish for them so much, you know. But you guys, you know, the other thing that's different, too, is water temperature. You know, compared to out there, compared to here, I mean, generally, you know, in the wintertime, you know, we're down to 32 degrees. And like this winter, I was fishing in 7 below 0 weather, you know. And so that's tough fishing. And we'll actually jig fish for steelhead all the way down to a size 10 tube jig. You know, which is really, really small.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I would never even dream about fishing something that small.
Yeah, I would never really dream about fishing -7.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, you got to do what you got to do to get fit.
Totally.
Get a fish to the net, you know. So, but the other thing, too, that I really love about the West Coast is the scent thing, okay? Here in the Great Lakes, a lot of people have realized that scent is important. But for the most part, the West Coast has been like the pioneer or the leader of the scent game. You know what I mean? And it's one of the things that I was amazed the first time I went out there and I stopped at a tackle store. And there is an aisle on both sides, like, really long, that's nothing but scent. And I was like, man, this is so awesome, because I know how important scent is, you know. And I just wish more people in the Great Lakes would realize how good a fish can smell.
And it's real, you know, surprising, considering that, like you were talking about, how heavily pressured, you know, your fisheries are. And we've seen, you know, we laugh and joke about it. When someone posts a picture and there's 200 guys on the bank of the river, and most likely it's from one of those openers, you know, back in your neck of the woods. And it's funny, because even with what we call crowded rivers, you know, we're always playing and always adjusting with the scents just to have a little bit over an edge over that other size 10 tube jig that's going down the river for that fish. You wanted to bite my tube jig, not your tube jig. So, yeah, so that scent game is really kind of interesting that it hasn't taken hold over there.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, I mean, I can take this time to give you guys, your listeners, a little education about how good a fish can smell. In 1987, some Canadian scientists created a homeopathic solution out of human skin cells. And what they did is they took this solution, they deposited in the river with migrating salmon, and the salmon stopped migrating. Then they took bear hides and put bear hides in the river, and the salmon stopped migrating. Now, what people need to realize is, does the fish say, hey, that's a fisherman, or hey, that's a bear? No, they're just genetically programmed to know and understand, hey, that's danger. You know, I've got to shy away from that. And when a fish can smell parts per billion in 1,000 times better than my bird dog, I mean, why wouldn't you use anything to your advantage? And the thing that cracks me up is some people say, well, I don't believe in that scent. I don't think it really makes a difference. And I want to say, so what you're saying is God gave these fish the ability to smell this good, but they're not going to use their nose. Kind of like, that's like saying a white-tailed deer is not going to use its nose. And that's why it's just so important. And I think a lot of people are missing the boat. You know,
well, I mean, by saying scent doesn't matter, you know, to the salmon fishermen over here, by saying scent doesn't matter is like saying all egg cures are the same. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
everybody's been on that river where they've seen that one guy absolutely horse fish after fish after fish it, while they sat there fishing eggs and didn't get bit. So there's no question that those fish can do that. I mean, another prime example is I got these stupid fish in my fish tank, right? And they're swimming around, and I feed them, okay? And I'll put these, you know, all the flakes go out, and these fish will swim up to one flake. And that flake doesn't look any different than another flake. And it's only the little black-eyed tetras. Anyways, they'll freaking pick it up and they'll spit it right back out instantly. And they'll swim over an inch and grab the other one that looks at it and eat it. And then they'll go around and they'll eat like four or five, and then he'll grab another one and spit it out in just like a split second. It's like, there's got to be something in that flake that fish doesn't want or that is detecting to make him spit that flake out but yet grab all the other ones. It's weird to say, and you can't think that those fish smell. You're insane.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I'll tell you what I tell folks. Well, if you want to be in denial and don't use scent, well, that's just more fish for me, right?
Damn, we shouldn't have put out Addicted Steel Blend. We should not have put out Addicted Steel Blend.
Addicted Blend must be made of all the good flakes.
Yes. All the good. Dude, Josh.
That's good.
Yeah, something else, too, that we do. I mean, I know there's people out there that do it, but it's pretty much the standard and norm here, is we tie our eggs up into spawn bags, right?
Nobody does that around here,
and
right?
We'll tie a single leg up in a bag, or just two or three eggs, or a dime size, nickel size, or a quarter size, and the benefit of that is obviously we can match the color size profile based on the current water temps and the current water conditions. But the best thing by using the spawn netting that we do out here is the colors, you know, because we can do a lot of different color palettes, and we can tie up a bunch of different eggs, you know, different sizes and different colors, and have them with us. So if we're noticing a certain egg color is working better, you know, we have them at our disposal. But we use spawn bags a lot, and I know you guys cure up your eggs and just fish the skeins, you know, right on the hook.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that, because actually this entire steelhead season, that's all Cameron did was fish spawn sacks.
Yeah.
He started fishing spawn sacks.
No, to heck with it. Let's start talking about this. Steelhead season's over, so... Yeah, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, running around your home river, that's what, you know, everybody did. And everybody has really gone away from spawn sacks and gone to beads and gone to jigs. And this year, our run over here, Roger, wasn't very good. So one of the days, I'm like, well, I'm going to go back to some shot-patterned spawn sacks. Now, we fish 12 mil beads, right? Left and right, everywhere. Right. Yeah, that's kind of the thing now.
Yeah.
Well, now I just make, when you try to do a bait of eggs that small, and you cast it out there and a smolt hits it, or you pull it too hard on the rocks, there's not a lot of skein there to hold those eggs together. It's gone.
Right.
So I basically ran up and down these rivers while the pressure was on and the fishing wasn't that good, and absolutely mopped fish up on basically 12 mil little spawn sacks, little quote-unquote beads that were made out of freaking steelhead or made out of salmon eggs. You know, that eggs.
Right on.
And the bottom line is like, okay, so, you know, you're going to fish a bead. And I mean, I fished everything the exact same way we'd normally fish a bead, except for fishing eggs. And I don't know a damn steelhead on the face of the earth that has not been enticed by a bait of eggs. And yeah, it was, for me, it was an absolute game. I mean, it was hundreds of steelhead this season. It was an absolute game changer.
And it might have even pulled the fish out after we had worms. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's funny. It's funny because we watch you guys, like some of the guys on the East Coast will post something like, oh, we got our bait ready. And they'll post a jar of spawn sacks. And I'm just like, oh, nobody say anything. Nobody say anything. And then like everybody just ignores it. I'm just like, way to go, dude. Yep. Way to go. You will murder.
Right on. Well, let's face it. I mean, all of our techniques, I mean, basically came from you guys. Right. And speaking of the bead game, I mean, the bead game really didn't really start taking off here in the Great Lakes until like 2005. And technically, you know, they've been fishing beads on the West Coast in Alaska since the 60s.
Yeah,
you know?
That's Marlin's go-to.
And
right there.
One thing that I've noticed this year, like you were speaking of, like the 12 millimeter beads, I am starting to notice finally that some guys out here are now running the larger beads, you know, the 12 millimeters. I mean, because we fish a lot of 6, 8, and 10s, and now I'm seeing guys starting to fish the 12 and 14 millimeter beads.
Yeah, I usually prefer 20 mil.
But, definitely a bead craze.
But I mean, just like with spawn sacks kind of going away, I mean, that's how... I mean, 20 years ago, walking up and down the banks, that was a lot of our game. We had a little bait container that you had on your belt loop on your side, and that's what you did. You went, you walked out. You didn't fish bobbers, training wheels. You didn't fish any of that stuff. You went down to the bank, and you had your little bait container, and you had 500 liters that you would need for the day after you
broke off 500 liters for one steelhead.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. I never said it was the right way to
and
fish.
And I'd come in right behind you and go, zzz, and just yank them out.
No, you weren't like even, you were still fishing ditch pickles, so I don't want to hear it.
That's probably true.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you're right. No,
I was fishing for fish that survive no matter what. Not these frailant little freaking steelhead that die if you freaking touch them.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
97% mortality rate. Close all the rivers.
97% mortality rate. Yeah. How many question for you on that? So, you know, I don't know how, I mean, over there, you guys, it's all catch and kill over there, right, Roger?
Well, pretty much. I mean, there is some natural reproduction going on in a very few select rivers. What's cool right now is we're just wrapping up a program called the Salmon Ambassador Program, and that's where they did a study to find out how much natural reproduction was actually going on with the salmon. And what really shocked our DNR in the Great Lakes was that there was a lot more natural reproduction going on than that was once thought. So what's going to be cool is starting next year in 2018, they're going to switch that program over to steelhead, and we're going to see how much natural reproduction is really going on. But for the most part, they're all stocked fish, right? They're just stocked fish. And
Just wait till your departments get some natural fish, and then they'll try to make some wild gene banks, and then they'll stop stocking them, and then they'll, okay, bad joke.
Well, yeah, man. Let them get
their hands on it. It'll be over soon.
Yeah, no, we're all on the same page. I mean, I get it. I know what's going on out there. We have that here. But at the same time, you know, they're stocked fish. And me personally, I don't harvest that many fish. You know, I really don't. I mean, I keep a few every year for.
So it's a lot of catch and release fishing.
Yeah. So, you know, so not everybody, you know, meat lockers them up, but there's the fair share. But I will tell you, I don't know if you guys are familiar with John McMillan's work about fish metabolisms, but that would be something else that would be cool to talk about. And what I think is the guys that are meat lockering up these fish are actually catching the high metabolism fish, because those are the ones that are easiest to catch because they have the shortest memory span. You know, all fish have three metabolisms, a slow metabolism, an inefficient metabolism, and a fast metabolism. And what scientists have found out is that the fish with the fast metabolism has the shortest memory. Like, you can literally catch it, release it. And this happened to me this year already. We released the fish, and I caught the same fish an hour later, right? A fish that has the inefficient metabolism, he might not bite for days or weeks or even a month. And then the fish with the slow metabolism, you know, might not bite for months after being caught. And so what's happening is these guys that are catching these fish, they're the high metabolism fish because they're the easiest fish to catch. And when they meat locker them up, they're making it tougher and tougher to catch the fish. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's breeding the bite. You're fishing. You're catching the biters, and so like that's why like a lot some of our West Coast like broodstock programs are trying to get some of those fish. You know, especially in these naturally spawning fish, to take those fish into hatchery. The biter, take that biter into hatchery, breed that Bonner biter, pass on those genetics, and that's why some of those fisheries down on the Oregon coast and like what they used to have on some of the Columbia tributaries until NFS and some of those guys got involved, was actually producing some very good fishing for big hatchery fish, because they would in turn clip those fish as well, or at least a certain percentage of them. So yeah, no, there's definitely,
right on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think everybody could be, you know, be with agreements there that there are biters and then there are not biters. But real fast, right, going back to my point, since that's a big, heavy catch and release fishery, what we were talking about beforehand, real quick, how many dead steelhead do you see laying on the banks of the River Marlin? And you're, I mean, how many fish, you know, if we're catching and killing some of these fish, how many fish have you seen on the bank this year in all your ups and downs travels dead? How many did you
see? I didn't
see
it. Yeah. Zero. How many did you see? Zero. So yeah. So anyway, I was trying to get back to that original point. Was just that the, you know, the catch and release die. 97% of them die. No, they don't die.
Yeah, but that's
I totally agree with that.
That is what is fed to everyone. That's fed to the public.
It is fed to the public, but to the guys that are walking these streams every time, every day that the water levels are even remotely conditioned, if they were dying in that big of numbers, you would see one or two every now and then. I know they drift downriver, blah, blah, blah. You would still find a few dead fish.
You find the dead salmon everywhere.
Yeah. Find dead salmon, case in
even
point.
In rivers that don't have very many, like our home
case
river.
Case in point. Yeah. So, at any rate. So.
Well, Roger, it's been great talking to you. It was some good, cool information. Why don't you, real quick, before you kick out, give everyone where they can find you on social media and all that stuff.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I have a fishing forum page called Steelhead Manifesto, and then also have a website, steelheadmanifesto.com. And if you guys ever are in the Great Lakes and like to go fishing, give me a call and let's get together. And if anybody has any questions, they can always email me at steelheadmanifesto@gmail.com. And I really appreciate you having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for that east side input. Very cool. Thank you much.
Thanks, Robert.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
See you, man.
Cool. We got to go do that. We got to go do that.
Definitely. I want to go fish a size 10 tube jig.
I know, yeah.
And a spawn sack with 4 eggs in it.
But, I mean, the numbers over there are pretty nuts.
Yeah. Lots of fish.
I think they have, look at the Chinooks and some of the other big stuff they get coming out of the Great Lakes. Yeah. I mean, they eat those owl wives. I mean, they might not be good for eating, but sure feeds those fish pretty good.
I was going to say, those Chinook over there are nasty.
They're nasty and they're
they're green.
They're green. Have you eaten one?
No.
No. No, well, it's like as soon as they enter the tributary, they just turn into a dinosaur. Are they like all Thule strain?
You see the ones they catch in the middle of the lakes, like the guys out there fishing 15 rods a boat.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, they're cromers.
Yeah.
I automatically have this image of just big green tule, because that's the ones you always see posted, and they're just nasty.
The New York guys, I think, you'll see, like, oh, we got into them, chasing crom.
What's funny, too, is they'll post them on, like, our groups over here, and they just instantly get smacked. Like you're in the wrong place posting
our Hanford Reach guys. Opposed to the Brights. Because they're actually called Brights because they're meat.
We should call. Are we going to give a Hanford Reach guy a call here, Lucas?
Yeah. I think we are.
Yeah, what's up with... Do we got to call him or is he going
to
call in?
No,
here?
We got to call... Oh, does he need to call in?
Yeah, just have him call my number here, and we'll get TJ on the phone. Although he's been down here bunking with Cameron.
How was that, Cam?
He's weird.
Is he?
The stuff? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to get too creative here with that story. No.
No, that's fine.
No, it's a good time. We'll call it Springer Camp. It's like basically my couch, and then my kids bug him for, 2 days, 3 days when he's really tired. Nice. And it's funny because I laugh because one's two and one's seven.
There's Mr. Hester.
Oh, there he is.
What's up?
Mr. Hester.
We're just talking about how we are bunk mates, buddy.
Yeah.
You and Cameron been spooning?
Springer camp.
3 week winning streak.
That's a long time to spoon. Huh?
Yeah, it was actually pretty bomb. You know what? I actually owe them quite a few big favors because I haven't eaten like that in a long time. I mean, Taylor can make like cereal with or without milk, and that's about it.
Oh, that's good. Uh-oh. I think I'm going to go bunk at Cameron's house for a week, too.
Yeah.
No.
Not allowed.
No, we could do like, we'll do bass camp or something.
There you go.
Something crazy. Anyways, so this is TJ Hester, guys, from Hester Sport Fishing. We figured we'd bring him online here, talking about some of these spring fisheries and whatnot, some of his Springer experiences and stuff over here. And, you and I, we had a couple challenging freaking days over here. I saw you were back to whacking those walleyes over there, though, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, it's nice coming back to like a fishery like walleye where, instead of going all day, if you get one bite, like, we're in the middle of the pack to getting 25 bites an hour, like, a little slow. It's kind of nice.
Well, I mean, I like crappie fishing, just for that reason. I don't, I mean, as long as there's action, I'm game. So, and like you said, you got the endless, was it fish taco conveyor belt? I can't remember what it was. So whatever you said.
Dollar bills, y'all. Just keep coming down the river. It's great.
Yes. No dollar bills, y'all. Yeah. Heck yeah. Well, no, I mean, we came down here and crashed. And man, we spent a couple cold nights out in the river guarding some anchor spots. But after you took off, it turned into just kind of a, where we were catching fish, out deep. Well, no, that last day you were here, that was kind of when things switched on us, right?
Are you going to come back down this weekend, TJ?
No chance in heck.
Dude, loser. It's going to be open Thursday.
It's going to be fire,
Sunday, too.
What's also open is walleye, like right next to my house.
Yeah, isn't that open like every day of the year?
Okay, guys, if you want to go catch a 10-inch walleye, hit up TJ. If you want to catch a 40-inch salmon, hit up Cameron.
If you want a chance to catch a 40-inch salmon once a weekend, go spring fishing. That sounds great.
All right, I'll give you that. That's why I haven't been going either.
I was
going
to say, like, Marlon, be quiet, because right now the East Sider is whacked for Springers. Yeah. Nah, you got to put your time in. You haven't put your time in.
I have not put my time in at all. And I don't really care, honestly. It doesn't bug me. I enjoyed the break. Now I'll go ham on it again and back in my zone.
Now this week's go time. Yeah, test fisheries, bud. We're super strong. We caught 2,200 fish out of the 6,900 we're allowed, TJ. So I'm going to have to, send you every picture of every big fish we catch.
Don't worry, TJ. You won't get any pictures like the rest of us.
No, you won't get any because I've been really quiet this season because it's been really nice. Cat might have to go out of the bag this week.
There's been so many people fishing where you're fishing. Looks downriver and looks like a damn freaking, looks like buoy 10.
It could be way worse, though. Just remember that.
How is this guy from Tri-Cities telling you that?
Telling him what?
That it could be way, way worse, and he is absolutely right. I'd say right now pressure is about a third of what it usually is.
I just roll around the corner in I-5, and I'm like, oh, there's Cam.
The corner, shut up.
There he is.
No, yeah, pressure's been down, so yeah, and the Bonneville fisheries haven't really taken hold, so yeah, we're going in for 4 more days. You sure you don't want to come down? I kind of miss our spooning.
I know, it's going to be magical, but I also don't miss driving back, Sunday night late and crashing Arlington for a couple hours and waking up at like 10 o'clock, oh crap, I have class in the morning, what am I doing? Good.
Cam's wife's making lasagna on Sunday.
She's a babe. It's very underrated, actually.
I think it was steak fajitas one night too, but no. So you got class. Ooh, what's this class stuff that you're doing? Why aren't you just killing walleye 7 days a week and doing the salmon all a favor?
Yep.
Oh, because I'd work, what, 9 days a month and make the same schedule I would for guiding? Yeah, screw that, dude. How about it? In three years, let's see who's right about this whole Eastern Washington guiding thing. You know, if I was a Western Washington, it'd be a different story. You guys should guide whenever you want. Over here, dude, Plan B is awesome.
Why is that? Is it just because of temperatures and stuff in the winter? You guys, walleyes, you told me that walleyes a 365-day game over there.
Yes, walleye is, but I mean, everything else, I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, everyone here in Eastern Washington, we don't care about walleye. I mean, they're all salmon steelhead morons like you guys. So, I mean, my entire February, March of next year is filled up with guys already, but none of them are from Washington or Oregon for that matter. They're all from, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Michigan.
Well, yeah, but why? I mean, that's because that's your trophy season. That's when you're going to catch 10 plus pound walleye left and right, 20 a day, right?
Oh, exactly. It's great. But, you know, I think I'm going to like go market back there next year, you know, go back to Grand Rapids or something and try to get my summer stuff filled out because, you know, even back there, what I'm starting to learn is, yeah, great numbers day is still like 20 fish over there. But gosh, we can do that over here, you know, on a slow day. So, I mean, I've always said, you know, this is the trophy fishery, but now it's kind of looking like, gosh, this is a pretty damn good numbers fishery too. Yeah, what we should figure out for next year is like market something like, do you want a chance to catch a state record? You know, because, I mean, seriously, I mean, we got that 17 this year. Go look at like the stats on it for all the states in like North America or for, you know, the United States. Dude, that is a state record almost everywhere.
And what you're talking about is how you target these fish and where you do and how you follow them with the water, that those fish will be there next year and they'll be that much bigger. And
oh, that much bigger. It's so great. They don't leave. They're not necessarily territorial. They're just lazy. I mean, check this. I mean, if you were, you know, X amount of feet tall or whatever, and then you have this giant get on you that is a total abnormality compared to any other species, you know, I mean, would you want to move a whole lot either? I don't think I would either. I mean, they kind of sit and plant and like, oh my gosh, there's food that comes through here every single day and I don't have to move.
And what are the, and yeah. What is that food? And what is that food, TJ?
Oh, I don't know. They're little silver Skittles. Dude, I mean, let's be serious. Let's think about this. I mean, look at all the other bait fish. Sculpin. Okay, they're spiny as F. I mean, think about all these fish that they eat compared to salmon and sealet. Oh my gosh. That's a little gummy bear down there swimming around. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You said sculpin. I think there's baby shad, too, in there. There's some of that new freshwater shrimp for those little guys.
Ooh,
over there.
Those are delicious.
Yeah, little perch offspring and stuff like that. Your phone cut out just
salmon
for like a split second.
Salmon steelhead smolt, right?
Salmon steelhead smolt. I mean, I hear, but wait, you know, what? The hatchery ones are the real good because they got all the growth.
Oh, it's smoother. Yeah, it doesn't go through their teeth as easily.
It's kind of like a little Swedish fish.
Yeah, yes. There you go. No, they don't eat. They say they don't eat that many salmon and steelhead, but there's a lot of walleye over there, dude.
My only vision.
Yeah, that's true. I still think bass eat a whole lot more, but that's just again, we don't have any stats on that one. Until someone comes out with some run sheets on it, I think it will be very eye opening, and I'll
dude,
probably eat some humble pie.
Walleye and bass eat the hell out of those fish. I guarantee it. Why wouldn't they? I mean, those bass eat anything. Anything that goes by their face in a fast motion is getting eaten.
But it's not a game changer because think about the Umpqua River, which has one of the biggest smallmouth populations.
Same with John Day.
Yeah.
The reason why is what happened with the small out migration is those fish will tend to kind of move out into the middle of the currents and kind of get flushed down the middle of the river. Mm-hmm. They won't necessarily go to you. So there is, but you're right. There's got to be some interactions. Oh, yeah. One smolt takes one left turn and bang, he's totally. Dead.
And if you throw a little smolt colored crankbait around bass,
back when I was doing smallmouth guides, my best bait was a 3 to 4 inch like white and white and black patterned drop shotted Senko. So and it worked really well.
Yeah.
So I mean they gotta cross paths every now and then.
Yeah.
But
well, you guys saw those photos that I was sending you this winter.
Yeah, those were pretty silvery looking. Those
those were pretty incriminating photos.
But those were jacked. Those were even smolts.
Yeah, those were pretty fat smolts. I mean, but those you don't see that all the time, though, do you?
No, you clean a lot of times a year.
Yep. Now, springtime.
But what are you doing late spring, summertime? I mean, are you my only vision of walleye is 2 degrees in the dead of winter jigging mindlessly for hours, which was great, by the way, TJ, but man, it was freezing. But what are you doing now that it's warm enough?
Wussy.
it was good.
Westsiders.
Westsider. I mean, when you have to break the ice around the boat where you're launching it, it's something different. But what are you doing now? You were jigging before Dead of Winter. Are you doing a lot more trolling now, or are you still jigging?
No, it's jigging still. I mean, my dad went out the other day, and I think he got his fish in 2.5 hours, his 25. I have another buddy that got 53 in just a couple hours more. So all the fish are now really congregated because the water's still high. It just took a little bit for us to find them. I mean, there were always fish there. It was just difficult to spot them because the water has been so high. But gosh, when you find them, they're in a little Congo line again. I mean, these fish can only be in one little spot. Once you find them, there's, instead of 1,000 fish over 10 seam lines, there's 1,000 fish over one seam line. Wow. So it's definitely feast or famine. You know, once you find them, it's really game on. Mm-hmm. It is ridiculous.
It's just like springer fishing, huh?
Kind of.
Actually, it's kind of been that way. It wasn't until that morning TJ and I went out like at, I don't know, 2 a.m., to get our anchor spots because the fish were in that seam line. And then that morning, they were not in that seam line. But once we moved out, we put the herd on them. That was a lot of fun. So we adjusted. But
that was a cool bite. I'm usually not a very good comeback kid. If I don't get my fish by 10 a.m., we're giving up.
You're down and out. Your third round, you're gone. No, that was a good.
God, that's awesome. I get so. If I don't have something quick, I'm like just over it instantly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think that wasn't that the day.
Cameron and Jerry, you guys, moved anchor was that after Monday? Like 30 minutes.
Was that Monday? Did you fish Monday? You didn't fish Monday.
No, Sunday we bailed quick.
Sunday, yeah, Sunday gets bailed. So they show up, then they go down an anchor. 30 minutes goes by. I'm like, they're moving. They're coming up here, guaranteed. Here they come. Anchor again. 2 hours go by. Hey, dude, we're bailing.
Well, I mean, that's how me and Jerry fish.
even in those anchor lines, though, it was like sit sometimes for 2-3 hours, yeah, and nothing, which is. Mind-boggling. You have to have a good confidence in your game, plan.
Some good,
but then in that 30 minutes, you know, you'd hook four, and you know when that little pod finally came through, it was pretty challenging. Sometimes I wish you and I still need to get down here and start figuring out these winter walleyes down here, because like you said, they don't disappear, they don't vanish into thin air. They're down here in this lower system as well too, and we gotta put homework. We gotta put some homework in. Even the last time you came down,
we talked about that a little bit more. Even since the last couple trips down there, you know that maybe I was giving you not necessarily false information, but not the information that you needed to know. You know, we were always talking about rock and structure and all this stuff, but in all reality, I mean, the first thing you want to look for is temperature. You know, yeah. And I think we started off wrong there. So once you kind of get on the right track a little bit, let's start ABCs, you know what I mean?
He said food.
You said temperature and food this time down, where last time you wanted, you know, basically I sent you into some barren wasteland flats that we troll salmon and steelhead on that, you know, move across, but definitely weren't what you were talking about when we went on the outdoor GPS there. We were talking about walleye. I just like looking at you going like, that is not what you said the last time you came down here at all.
I guess I skipped a couple steps.
Who knows? Who would have thought? Walleye like to eat. Weird. Yeah, we're going to target that. We got some good spots picked out. We're gonna give it a shot.
TJ, what about the summer steelhead prediction? What does that do to your upper river game?
Oh, game over. I don't care. Whatever. Give me 5 fish to fish on. We'll be good. No, I'm joking.
Kill the last one, you stupid guy. Come on.
Honestly, you know, the upriver season, I've kind of given up on it. It's not necessarily one of my big seasons as of monetarily wise. I could really care less. Again, you know, what did we talk about the last 2 years? Walleye, right? Well, there's a whole lot of walleye in the system still, so it's not really that big of a deal. It's going to give me a little bit of you know, remorse on not being able to fish for them for a little bit, but they'll rebound. I feel like you guys are the same way in this one, where I'd rather not fish for 2 years and let our runs recover rather than just pound on them on bad years. So whatever our seasons are, I mean, whatever is best for the fish, I'm game for doing whatever that is.
Well, the problem with that is there's feel-good politics and there's stuff that actually is good for the fish, and mm-hmm. kind of figuring out what that is. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should be fighting over the last fish by any means, you know, but I think, you know, there could still be opportunity, and you know, after all, they don't want their hatchery fish spawning in the gravel, and we get hit over the head with that from lawsuits from NFS and stuff like that because we got too many hatchery fish, and then we get a run like this where there's not enough and da 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 da. So yeah, I think it's always kind of where you draw that line, but yeah, that B run prediction isn't looking very good. But like you said,
no,
there's a lot of walleye over there.
When did they put out the sockeye prediction?
So that should still be pretty good. I mean, gosh, 300,000 sockeye is a good run.
Is that what they predicted?
Can you guys still hear me, by the way?
Is that what they predicted is 300,000?
It's three something, yeah. 300,000 is a good run. I mean, I think last year we were just over 300,000. And, you know, I would put it up there as tied for our best year ever. It seems like no matter what comes, no matter what conditions, we always find sockeye somewhere. I love that saying, like the Mark Wahlberg movie is, I always find the fish, you know what I mean? It's a gosh, we always seem to do. I mean, and it's not an arrogant thing. It's just like somehow there's always a thermocline, a thermobarrier. There's high flow on the reach. Brewster's backed up. Wanapum's backed up. Something's always going to fish for sockeye. And they're kind of like springers in a sense where if they're there, they're probably going to bite. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot for them to get going. The only problem is you got to stop them. So high water, dams, thermal barriers, something of that nature. That's why you guys have such a hard time catching them, because they're going Mach 10 Usain Bolt by you guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, you see those dam counts ramp up for about a week, and then they're gone. And you see that coming through the lower river. You can get some opportunity on, but you're right. Yeah, they're cruising. They are cruising.
But yeah, there's going to be a lot of opportunity this year. You know, we've always been preaching doom or gloom, whatever, whatever, but you got to think. I mean, look with the Wenatchee fishermen. They haven't been able to fish steelhead. This is going on their second year now of no steelhead at all. I mean, it could be worse. I mean, Cam always talks about, well, we weren't fishing springers, you know, in the main stem Columbia however many years ago. I mean, it's very true. You got to
think. Before you were born. Just about, though. I mean, before 2000, before 2000, you know, no springers in the main stem except for that select bubble by the channel and all that nonsense. And then, you know, before 2006, no summer Chinook. Before 2009, no sockeye. You know, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there and a lot of these depressed runs that kind of come and go. But at the end of the day, it's like we do. I think I'm always one of those guys who think we have it a lot better than we think we have it.
Yeah, and the nice thing, summer-wise, spring, fall, is there's a lot of different species to fish for. So summer steelhead, that's a little easier to stomach than, say, winter
steelhead.
Hopefully
some of the tribs are okay.
Yeah, hopefully the tribs are okay, but imagine if, you know, we had no winter steelhead season. That would suck.
I want to talk about it.
Marlin would be, well, you can't really hunt sheds in December, can you?
Yeah.
I just start killing other
sheds.
Coyotes.
Yeah. I'll find things to do.
Nutria.
We'll have to figure out that winter walleye.
Yep. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
The problem is if salmon and steelhead runs keep getting as terrible as they, like if we do see them becoming, like if this summer we have no steelhead, I'm just not going to fish. I don't really care. I'll do other things. I love fishing for salmon and steelhead. I don't particularly like chasing other things that much.
Yeah,
like
you want a good opportunity.
Walleye and, you know, it's fun every once in a while, but
you
that's not something that
you're
gonna...
on a good one, so stop it.
I know, but that's not something that I'm going to do every day like I would salmon
or steelhead. Dude, so when that walleye bite was going on in the freaking channel, you were like fiending for them.
For
a week.
You can only reel up so many 2x4s.
Fair weather fishermen.
You know,
Marlin, you think that, but I really believe as soon as salmon and steelhead are gone, you're gonna be on something else.
And there's bass, and I do enjoy. I really do enjoy bass fishing. I think it's fun.
That's what I used to love.
There's a lot of that stuff out there.
That's where it all started.
I used to love it.
Heck yeah!
But truth be told, when I started Fishing Addicts in 2009, it was actually Hunting and Fishing Addicts. It was H&F, Hunting and Fishing Addicts. So
then you realized hunting was hard and you gave up on that too.
No, I just realized it was too hard to do both content-wise. Yeah. It's just too hard to do both. You have to have more people that are...
I already retired from shed hunting myself. I went out on top.
Yeah, he got one shed.
He went out one day and went, that's too much walking.
He went out one day and got the biggest shed he'll ever find in his life. And now he'll never go back.
So I quit.
Dude, that's like that gal I brought last year to Buoy 10. She caught that 38-pounder, first salmon, first hookup, first whatever day, even trying. It's like, you know what? I hate you. And that fish was the biggest one of the year. That fish was stupid.
Oh, my gosh.
Gotta love it.
I'll get back to fishing. I just been.
It's been a tough winter.
You know, honestly, it's funny, you talk life. I got a lot of stuff going on in just life in general. So fishing hasn't been high on my priority list because I got other goals.
Like I said, it's like you've got other goals and you got other things, and it's really hard to go out and grind a salmon at 17 foot high freaking Columbia with visibility a foot. Like, yeah, no, I completely get it. It's funny because an interesting statistic, you know, when we were talking about these million fish runs and everyone getting excited, is that there's like 20% less guide licenses purchased this year compared to last year for the Oregon State Marine Board.
I can't imagine how recreational license sales are going to be, because I know the fishing's down as well. I mean, definitely.
Well, like I said,
down.
You know, the people out there, it's about a third of what it is and stuff. And you know what? I'm just going to say it. The season's going to separate the men from the boys as far as all that stuff goes, but we'll see.
Heard that.
I'm going hard. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'm going hard.
Get it.
My boat's getting wrapped tomorrow, and I'm going to be out there every day.
Heck yeah. Should be a good one. Well, TJ, we'll miss you down here this weekend. I hope you kill some of those salmon eating sons of guns up there. Kill lots of them. No limit.
Just for you guys.
No limit.
I am going to come up there because I want some walleye tacos. I do. I truly do.
Mm-hmm.
So this Saturday, I think it is, I have a pretty good crew on. So what I think about doing is sending a garbage bag full to Lex, because I owe her a whole bunch of walleye meat that I promise I'll send you some too, Marlon.
Yes, please.
Nice. It's cool. I don't want any, TJ.
Heck yeah. No, yeah. He doesn't like you. You haven't spooned with him yet, so you don't get that opportunity.
One spoon equals one walleye.
Man, you owe me like 400 walleye.
Garbage can is going to be full.
That's a lot of walleye.
It's a lot of walleye.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Well, thanks again, TJ. We will chat with you shortly.
Wait, real quick, before you bail out, there could be some new people that don't know who you are. Pitch them your website or your Facebook page or whatever.
All right, guys. So it's HesterSportFishing.com. It would look a lot better if Lucas would do it.
Hey, Facebook, I sent over all that info.
Fishing. Phone number 509-388-7906. Or just get a hold of Marlon or Cam or Josh or whoever. And
yeah, you can always hit us up on Fishing Addicts, or just find him. He's easy to find on Facebook. HesterSportFishing.
Find me.
Yeah.
And check out. Thanks, TJ.
Thanks, buddy.
See you guys.
Check out the tutorials on the YouTube channel as well. Go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel. TJ has submitted a bunch of amazing walleye tutorial content. It's just really good information. Right now we got some information on walleye trolling with worm harnesses and bottom walkers, and then just some jigging techniques.
Also, if you guys haven't subscribed to this podcast, make sure you subscribe to it. I know I'm subscribed to all my favorite. Do you guys have any other podcasts that you listen to at all? I listen to one. It's called The Huntsman Journal. It's pretty sweet. The dude does like these hunting stories. It's pretty dope.
Yeah.
But there's a few different ones that I subscribe to. Do you guys subscribe to any other podcasts, or are you guys just losers?
I didn't even listen to our podcast.
I listen to Gary Vaynerchuk. I'm subscribed to. He's got a pretty good one.
Oh yeah,
he is pretty inspirational. That's for sure.
Yeah. What's that's a 2-point good. Conversion?
2-point conversion with the. Zach and Mike White.
Yep, that's another good. That's another
Did I
good
tell you that Zach ended up being a super good musician buddy's son? So a guy I play with all the time, Tim Curran, he's an amazing singer. Mm-hmm. That Zach is apparently his son. So
yeah.
I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So I'm on board the 2-point conversion.
The 2-point conversion.
2-point conversion.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good little podcast. They talk about sport. Yeah, the little video I liked. I like the setting and everything.
That's more your style. I'm not really into the basketball, you know.
Yeah.
It's not my deal.
What are you into? I'll watch country football. Music and Romeos?
Yeah. Yeah. Hunting, fishing, love.
They're on sale right now. Bob's Sporting Goods.
Oh, yeah.
They're running a sale for Georgia Romeos right now.
I tag Marlon.
Stock's going to be gone.
Yep.
Did you see how crazy that post was going?
Dude, people love Romeos.
Oh, their stock's gone.
Yeah.
That thing got shared like 283 times.
Well, like you said on our live feed, you're like, this should be a who made that comment about this should be a Georgia Romeo? Well,
that's because everyone but one person.
What is Cameron? What is Cameron wearing right now?
Romeo.
Josh wearing Romeos. Though,
oh, Josh. Sure. So 2 out of 4 Romeos in here. That's good.
I'm gonna buy Marlon a pair of Romeos.
I know.
For Christmas.
No, someone already
know
did.
Someone did, and I burned them, and I videoed it.
Oh my gosh. That's classic.
You just can't argue with comfort, dude.
No, I've asked Lonnie, who wears Romeos like crazy, and he said they're not even that comfortable.
They're just easy to slip on.
He said they're convenient.
They're convenient.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'm wearing like a lame version here.
That's pretty much like...
pretty much a Romeo.
That's like the old man version of like Romeos. That's like the old folks home Romeo.
But when you're just about to walk out the door and you're an old person who doesn't want to bend over
I wish we had
shoe.
Some video right now to show everyone what Lucas is wearing for shoes. We could do one of those.
My wife asked,
I was going to say, you can see it on the Fishing Addicts Instagram right now.
Oh, there we go. There we go. But see, my wife hates these. Absolutely hates them, but she's
Jennifer, can you please buy Lucas some new shoes?
No, she has, and somehow these ones have still made it on my feet.
Well, she must burn those shoes.
She's tried. No, she seriously one time threw a pair of my shoes that were like these away. She threw them in the trash and then felt bad and bought me a different pair the next day. But yeah, they're bad, but hey, we're doing a podcast. We're not doing a video shoot. It's not like anyone's going to... Oh, wait. It was just posted on the Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're gone.
So, all right. Do we got any other announcements or anything, Cam? I know we got a couple things coming. We got this
Angler Convention
this weekend, right? Friday 4 to 8?
Friday 4 to 8 is Bob's family night. So on Friday... what is Friday's date? What is the date?
The 21st?
No.
20th?
21st. I think it is 21st.
Yep, the 21st.
Yeah, so Friday the 21st, 4 to 8, we're doing a little... Bob's Sporting Goods is doing a family night, kind of like a low-key situation where you bring your kids in. We're going to have WDFW there, some representation there, talking about some of the lakes and stuff in the local area for Southwest Washington. Going out and catching some of these other target species of fish that we're all going to be fishing for when salmon and steelhead are gone. No, I'm kidding. But trout, crappie, perch, bass, stuff like that, stuff to get kids more involved. So there's going to be some knot tying classes and some demonstrations, a small seminar. There'll be just some really good information. There'll be trout setups and riggings, so check it out. And then also on April 29th and 30th, we're doing our Northwest Angler Convention for Kokanee. It's a 2-day Kokanee event. The first day is 8 hours in class. It's myself, Austin Mosier, Bill Herzog, and Jeremy John at the Lewis River Golf Course. And then on the next day, it'll be on-the-water training with the four of us, either up at Merwin or Yale. We still don't know. We're going to go kind of where it's best and where we can get away from the crowds. So that's where we'll be April 29th, 30th, and check out Northwest Anglers Convention, nwanglersconvention.com.
Yep, nwanglerconvention.com for tickets, or you can just go to Cody Herman's website at Day One Outdoors and purchase those tickets. I think it's getting close to being full, so you might want to get those right away.
Every one of them is sold out, so I think we only take 100 people on each one. So yeah, either way, they'll be looking forward to that. And then I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't think that
was it. Springers this weekend.
Yeah. If you guys don't already, check out our live feeds on Facebook. We got some good ones coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out the live feeds. We got Nick Popov in the studio tomorrow. We're going to be talking Willamette Springers.
Cool.
Going to be fun. So check out our live feeds on Facebook. Make sure you go follow us on Instagram, Snapchat, all the different things out there. We're on all of them. So make sure you follow us.
Yeah,
anything else, Lucas?
Fishingaddictsnorthwest.com. We always got new articles and videos going up there every week. So just
and
go
be
check
on the lookout
out.
For a new website coming really soon.
Absolutely. And more tutorials. We're going to get into some kokanee stuff, I believe, as well as your classic salmon and steelhead. So subscribe to that YouTube. And please tell your friends about this podcast. We love getting it out there. And if you guys have any input or any questions, join in on that Fishing Addicts NW Facebook group. And let's get the discussion going. Just comment what you want to hear about, and we'll talk about it.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the river.
See you on the river.